Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
Hello, everyone. Great to be here with all of you today. Hopefully you can hear me okay. What I'd like to share with you all today is just one, a little bit about, you know, the growth that we're seeing in plant medicine, which is pretty exponential in these times, particularly as more and more people are taking greater interest in their own development. I'd like to share also that, you know, the overwhelming majority of potential benefits that can come from plant medicine are actually lost today. And I'll share a little bit about my personal story, which reflects the same in terms of my first experiences and really kind of speaks to the motivation for launching our business, Behold Retreats. I'll speak a little bit about the kind of end-to-end process when it's, you know, when it's done best to maximize the benefits, and also the various elements that are important to being able to maximize the benefits of plant medicine. As we go through, would very much welcome questions that you all may have. Would like to keep this as interactive as possible, such that we are touching on the subjects that you yourselves find interesting, and that it's kept relevant to you. So I'll share very briefly a bit about my own personal story. I've spent the majority of my career consulting Fortune 100 companies with their digital strategies and digital transformation programs. Companies like Huawei, Samsung, Telstra, American companies, including Pearson, some of the big pharma companies, which like to keep their names a bit more private for this sort of work. And what I saw from my work in the corporate world is that, you know, there's a lot of people that are pushing themselves pretty hard to succeed without really the understanding of why they're looking to be successful. And equally, I kind of fit that description. So after working 5 years in Hong Kong, I decided to take a year off and overcame my skepticism in relation to plant medicine and all other substances, and actually joined a few friends in Peru in what was really a transformational experience and retreat, an ayahuasca retreat that spanned over the course of a week and changed my mind about quite a number of things. But in experiencing that retreat and all of the potential benefits that could have been unlocked for me personally as a result of the realizations that came to me, I found myself about a month or two later exactly back to who I was before the retreat. And so over the past few years, I've really spent a lot of time and energy trying to understand plant medicine in more detail, and also to understand how to get the most out of plant medicine retreat experiences. And so that's a little bit about what I'm hoping to share with all of you today. So I think, you know, what's happening neurologically during these plant medicine retreats is particularly interesting. These plant medicines like ayahuasca and psilocybin promote neurogenesis, which is new neurons forming within your brain, as well as new neuronal connections. And what you see within the brain of an individual when they are in an MRI machine in on-plant medicine is a massive reconciliation between different parts of the brain. I saw someone in the chat mention Michael Pollan's book. He's got a really incredible infographic on exactly that, which shows that under plant medicine, a human brain looks a lot more like a Buddhist monk with 20 or 30 years meditation practice, where you can see different parts of the brain are freely able and in fact are exchanging information. So it's this really kind of quite beautiful cohesive picture in terms of the neurology. In stark contrast, if you take your average person from the Western world and put their brain into an MRI machine, what you can see is that there's a small subset of neural pathways that have become incredibly worn. Now, some of the leading thinking behind that is that we are just overwhelmed in the Western world today. We're overwhelmed by the decisions that we have to make. We're overwhelmed by everyone competing for our attention. We're overwhelmed by the many demands that life places upon us. And so our brains naturally begin to make shortcuts in our thinking. And that those shortcuts sound like a positive adaptive response, but in practice, they're actually damaging the neurology of our brains. And so we come to think in overly patterned ways, we come to act in overly patterned ways, and we actually lose a large percentage of the neuroplasticity and so the function of our brains as a result of this kind of natural adaptive response to everything that's going on in life. So these plant medicines, you know, certainly there are other ways to begin to heal those neurological disorders. Meditation is great. As Virginia was alluding to before, practices to get back into your body are also another great way to begin to heal your neurology and also the body and mind connection. But plant medicines certainly are the most exciting and interesting modalities that we have in these times to really begin to accelerate the reconnection within our brains and also the reconnection between mind, body, and also soul. So that's a little bit about kind of what's happening neurologically with plant medicine. In terms of helping people get the most out of these experiences, I think there's, you know, as more people do this, there's what we see from our clientele is that a lot of people aren't necessarily taking the necessary time and energy to research the subject ahead of actually committing themselves to a plant medicine retreat. So we would encourage anyone who's thinking about this subject to really take the time and the energy to hear other people's stories, to look at a little bit about, you know, to learn a little bit about the science yourselves, and to take very seriously a decision to work with plant medicine. So there's a big educational component that that we would encourage everyone to take seriously. Second, there's a component of preparation. We would encourage anyone ahead of a plant medicine experience to really understand themselves to the extent that, you know, to the extent that is possible. There are all sorts of materials out there that support self-discovery. We at Behold Retreats, we provide program materials to support self-inquiry so that you can understand, you know, the predominant thinking that you have in relation to yourself. What is it that makes you great? What is it that's holding you back? What is your relationship to yourself? What is your relationship to others? How do you think about money? How do you think about love? Do you love yourself? How does that turn up in your everyday life? What is your relationship with your body? What is your relationship with career? What is your relationship with friends, etc.? To really begin to understand the aspects of your life that may benefit from intentions. That may benefit from attention. And that's really with the underlying motivation to help you set meaningful intentions for a plant medicine journey. And that really, you know, in terms of coming into a plant medicine retreat, meaningful intentions can make the difference between a really interesting experience and something that has the potential to profoundly change your life. When done well, intention setting can open up absolutely new avenues for you and provide you the right basis for exploration during the retreat experience. The third component is around the retreat itself. Now, there's many different plant medicine retreats out there. There's many more that are opening each day. I think we had a look as we set ourselves up. There's about 200 different plant medicine retreats that are out there today, and kind of, like I said, more and more each day. And they offer many different formats, many different modalities, many different medicines, many different traditions. And there's pros and cons to each of those. But with the rapid growth that we're seeing in this space, certainly there are some that are taking this work very seriously, as it should be. And there are others that are kind of riding the wave a little bit because they see this as an opportunity to come in and make the most of the growth in this space. So, you know, what I would encourage anyone who's thinking about a retreat is, if you're in a position to do so, to really take the time to set aside for yourself and take something like a week in a place that's going to allow you to kind of prioritize yourself for the duration of the period. A lot of our clients these days are going to Mexico, Netherlands, Costa Rica, Peru, and again, typically taking something like a week for themselves in order to really go deep into the experience, benefit from a few ceremonies, and to really, you know, make, you know, commit to the changes that they would like to introduce into their lives. And then the last piece, which is often overlooked, but probably the most important within this end-to-end process, is the integration work. Now, a lot of people come out of these retreats feeling absolutely motivated, rejuvenated, excited about their return to life, excited about the lessons that they've learned, and really, you know, motivated to bring those back into really beautiful ways into their daily life. Now, what often happens is that upon return to daily life, whether that's work, family pressures, you know, demands from the many sources of life, people tend to revert back very quickly to who they were pre-retreat. And that's exactly what happened to me with my first plant medicine retreat, is that the integration process just wasn't there. There wasn't the right support available around me to help me make sense of my experience and to help me really integrate the lessons into everyday life. So that was really, you know, the integration. If there's one piece out of this this talk that I would really emphasize, it would be the integration aspect. And I would encourage everyone in exploring a plant medicine journey to consider either hiring a coach or a therapist in relation to supporting them with their integration. The next month following a retreat is really the crucial period. You know, for that month, you definitely want to have a daily journaling practice, set time aside for yourself to meditate and to really think about who you're going to be for that day, review the commitments that you made to yourself during the retreat experience. And also, it's worth having something like a weekly catch-up with a coach or a therapist, just to share the experience that you're having and the challenges that you're having with integration, because often you will find, or you will feel, that there are things in your life that are keeping you from being able to meet the commitments that you made to yourself at the end of the retreat. And so having a third party to kind of bounce ideas around and to help guide you to make sure that you don't allow the limitations from your pre-retreat life to come back in the same way, shape, and form into your post-retreat life, so that you really sustain those benefits and really elevate your life as a result of the retreat experience. In establishing our business, we had envisaged that we would mostly see first timers for our business, people who had not worked with plant medicine before. But actually, what we're finding really interesting is that a lot of people who have done considerable work with plant medicine are actually coming through and to work with us. And the motivation behind that is that they really like what we're saying in terms of integration. So again, as each of you are exploring your own journeys, would really encourage you to think to really carefully consider integration and make sure you have the right coach and therapist to support you with the integration journey. The The last piece that I'll speak about before I start to kind of look into a few of the questions that have been asked here are in relation to the different aspects that are coming together for the journey. So there's a few different elements that are, again, often overlooked in relation to this work that are super important. One we've kind of spoken about already to a great extent, which is intentions. The second is around medicine itself. The medicine can come in all sorts of qualities and from all sorts of different places. And so almost no two ayahuascas are the same. Different traditions brew ayahuasca very differently. There's actually three different ayahuasca plants, one black, one yellow, one red, typically referred to as the red vine, the black vine, the yellow vine. And then ayahuasca is also mixed with any variety of other plants, which can lead to quite drastically different results. So for those of you who are discerning in nature, I would encourage you to really understand the nature of the different medicines. And if you're choosing a retreat, to really understand what medicine are they working with, and what does that actually entail in terms of its predisposition or propensity to occasion different types of experiences, because again, not all of these medicines are the same. The second piece is that's really important is the facilitators themselves. The facilitators are obviously setting the space and making sure that you feel very comfortable and very well supported, very well held throughout that experience. And so, you know, I think it's where possible, I would encourage people to try to meet the facilitators and speak with the facilitators that you will actually have for your retreat experience ahead of the retreat experience, just to make sure that, you know, they're providing you an energy and a clarity around the experience that really resonates with you. You know, there's a lot of businesses out there that have really nice websites. It's not too difficult to have a really nice website. But it's much more important that you feel a real resonance between yourself and the retreat facilitator that you're going to be working with. So don't be shy in asking the various retreat centers to actually speak to who it is that you will be working with. I see here, it's a great question. I see here someone's just asking about shamans, which is our next subject, which is rather than shamans, I'm actually going to use the word healer. And there are healers and shamans of many different traditions. And again, there are, you know, some people in exploring these sorts of experiences never want to be more than 20 feet away from a latte machine, because, you know, pushing themselves into an experience to explore the depths of their psyche is already a big ask of them. And so doing so in somewhere in the Amazonian jungle is perhaps a little bit too much for a first experience. Other people, myself included, I wanted my first experience to be an indigenous and more shamanic type of experience. And so that's more suited to their needs. And so again, there's many different types of experiences out there and many different types of healers and traditions of healers and shamans that do this type of work. For people who don't know this work, it's very difficult to understand what a quality shaman looks like and what a quality healer looks like. This is part of the motivation, is again, for establishing our business at Behold Retreats, is we do a very strong vetting process for all of our facilitators and all of our healers. What I would encourage everyone to do when you're looking for your own retreats and your own experiences is to read the reviews extensively. It's very difficult to find and be confident it's very difficult to be confident that the healers are absolutely going to know what they're doing. So I would, you know, in those cases, I would look to the more experienced and the more credentialized retreat centers that are out there. They will probably be a good conduit to having some confidence that they've got really high quality healers. You know, this is still very much an emerging space. There are many stories. Unfortunately, there are too many horror stories out there, and there are too many cowboys out there doing this work because it's not regulated or kind of quote unquote overseen. Lots of interesting messages here that I'll come to in a minute. It's clearly not a regulated industry. And so, you know, to some extent, you have to trust your intuition. In order to trust your intuition, I would take the time and the energy to connect in with humans that are representing an individual retreat center in order to make sure that you feel a real resonance there and that you feel comfortable that they have your highest interests in mind. The other aspect that I will share is that, like I said, there's many different traditions and there's different energetic aspects to the different traditions. For those people who are motivated to do so, you know, some people are just looking for a safe and immersive and life-changing ayahuasca experience. There are a number of good options out there in psilocybin experience. There are a number of good options out there. Other people who are more inclined to do the research do look into the various traditions and see which resonates with you. I think, you know, in terms of I'm seeing some of the conversation around regulation, I think that's a particularly interesting subject, especially as things become decriminalized or legalized in the West. Ayahuasca in particular really doesn't fit our Western model of medicine. The reason for that is that ayahuasca has something like 463 compounds in the medicine. And that can vary obviously by different brew of medicine and different tradition of medicine. And not only that, but the amount of each of the compounds can vary between the different brews of ayahuasca. Now, the reason that's challenging is that in the West, we have a obsession with isolation of a single molecule or a single compound. So with the psilocybin research, it's actually synthetic psilocybin that's being used, which allows confidence that there's only a single molecule that's present for the research. And it also allows dosage control. Now, compare that to ayahuasca, where you've got 463 compounds in different amounts by different brew. It makes it incredibly challenging to research. Now, what's interesting about this is that, you know, there's an observation that's being made that, well, we have this new, quote unquote, new medicine that's obviously thousands of years old and not new at all. But we have this new medicine that seems to be working far better than anything else that we have before. And yet we're trying to use this new medicine and fit it into this kind of relatively broken medical system that we have in the West. And I think, you know, without getting too philosophical about, you know, different medicine traditions, I think that's a very interesting observation to make that, you know, we do have clearly in psilocybin and ayahuasca and other plant medicines, something that is clearly working far better than some of the other modalities that we have. And so that's very interesting. Are we making too many compromises to these medicines in order to fit them into our Western medicalized system? And I think to some extent, the answer is yes, but it's still worth making those compromises such that we can get these medicines available and legal. And so people don't have to spend thousands of dollars to go on retreats in faraway countries in order to be able to do this work. I think I saw earlier a question in relation to ayahuasca and cancer. I think, you know, there's an amount of research that's ongoing at the moment in the space, which I think is very interesting. One of our advisors is a gentleman by the name of Dale Millard. He's done some very exciting work in relation to isolation of compounds within ayahuasca. So looking at all of those 463 compounds I've looked at, I mentioned before. And there's an incredible amount of evidence that's growing that ayahuasca can in fact help with obviously a broad variety of illnesses, but within that cancer. In particular, there's a compound within ayahuasca that's worth looking at, which is not psychedelic and so therefore not illegal and available. And it's called harmine, H-A-R-M-I-N-E. If there's anyone that's interested in a paper that's that covers the subject in more detail, please send me an email. I'm just popping my email into the chat now. Send me an email and I will send you the paper that talks about the specific properties of harmine, which proven to be neurogenetic. So that's the improvements in the brain. It's proven to have anti-cancer qualities, so eradicate cancer cells. And the most surprising is that for the overwhelming majority of medicines that we have that are anti-cancer, they also have a negative interaction with our healthy cells. However, it looks like harmine actually does not. Harmine has actually got a positive interaction with healthy cells and a negative interaction or a kind of eradicative interaction with cancer cells, which is very, very exciting because it's just at odds and seems to be better than anything that we have. I do have to caveat that this paper that I will share with you, Dale Millard is a self-trained ethnobotanist, so he doesn't have the associated 20 letters that you would typically see from ethnobotanists, but he is very highly regarded and incredibly knowledgeable. Each conversation I have with him is perhaps one of the most humbling conversations I have, because it's just incredible how knowledgeable he is and how much he knows about plants and their respective healing properties, not just ayahuasca and psilocybin and other psychoactive plants, but just the full spectrum of plants. He's a real man of the plants, as it were. So with that, I'd love to hear a little bit more about questions that may have emerged, so that I can speak to other specific examples. I see here there's a comment around drinking ayahuasca with 56 strangers. Wow, that is not necessarily a format that I would recommend, and here's why. I think there are retreat centers that do large groups of people. Energetically, when we work with plant medicine, there is a lot that's happening spiritually and energetically. Hopefully those are words that make sense to a majority of the people here. When you have large groups of people such as that, there are energetic elements that are just too chaotic. And so what you tend to find can happen is that that there's a bit of a domino effect. One person will start to have a horrific experience, which will begin to impact the next person, which will impact the next person. All of a sudden, you've got a room full of people that are in absolutely the worst experiences of their lives altogether. I've heard many stories that mirror that. And so I would encourage, again, everyone who is looking at such a retreat experience, if you're in a position to do so privately, beautiful, try to do that. I personally had all of my major breakthroughs in private retreats with working with a couple. It's more expensive, but it's absolutely worth it if you're in a position to afford it. If not, I would very much encourage people to explore smaller groups between 6 to 10, no more than 12 people. And for a group of 12, typically we would look for at least 2, preferably 3 healers within that group, because again, they're managing a lot from an energetic perspective. And so that's very important. Just looking.
There was an interesting question a little while ago, Jonathan, about a person having a session and receiving some messages. And she asked, how much should I believe?
That's a great question. That's a great question. And I see another question. What would you recommend advice if it comes to integration work? So my number one advice would be to get advice. There are other people who have walked this path. Do not try to walk this path by yourself. There are a lot of people out there who are doing lots of plant medicine that are still messed up. So it is not the case you should just be doing a bunch of plant medicine and that good things will happen. That is absolutely not the case. And so part of what we're trying to do with Behold Retreats is to provide the right structure so that the vine can grow, so that people can really flourish and make the most out of the medicine. But, you know, there's lots of incredible integration therapists and integration coaches that are out there. And they charge very reasonable prices. You know, of course, this is like any industry. You can spend $10,000 for an hour of integration coaching if you so choose. And, you know, for some people, there's an incredible value in that. But equally, there's therapists out there that are charging $50, $80, or $100 for each of their therapy and coaching session. And that is money incredibly well spent because they have been through and they have seen the patterns of hundreds, if not more, patients or clients that have been through exactly the same journeys that you have been through. And I know we all like to think that we are unique and that no one has experienced life as we have, and we all have our own stories. But guess what? It's fundamentally not the case. Coaches and therapists have seen enough clients and enough that they can spot the patterns, and they can help you make sense of what you have experienced, and they can help you integrate those lessons and also tell you which ones to sit on and not act upon, because often we will feel like there are things that we should do immediately in order to make the world right. And even if that's very strongly felt, that might not be the best thing for you. That might not be the best thing for people around you. So it's very important that you plot your next moves carefully post-retreat.
Building on that, there was another great question that said, do you think messages received from ayahuasca can be picked up and continued via psilocybin?
Sorry, let me make sure I understood that. Can you repeat that, Virginia?
Yeah, do you think person says that messages received from ayahuasca can be picked up and continued via psilocybin?
Absolutely. You know, before I started my own plant medicine journey, I was an angry atheist, and I could not have been convinced that there was a spiritual world out there. But these are medicines that are connecting you to the same spiritual realm. And so the messages that come from the spiritual realm are generally consistent with each other. I don't think I've ever heard of someone telling me that they had an ayahuasca retreat that told them that cats were beautiful creatures, and then they had a psilocybin experience that told them that they should start kicking cats. So the messages that come are very consistent. And to kind of expand upon that, these are not only are the messages consistent, but it's not actually required to have plant medicine to continue to get these messages. So I myself, when I meditate now, the messages are coming far more clearly. It doesn't require plant medicine in order to receive these messages. It's just that parts of our brains have been kind of reduced and dulled down over time. And these plant medicines begin to activate these receptors in our brains and begin to allow us to be more sensitive to getting these messages from the more spiritual realm. And so, you know, I think that's very important, is that as we begin to develop our sensitivities, that we don't develop a dependency. You know, this is medicine that can shine a light on a path to a better way of being, for, you know, spiritually, emotionally, physically, mentally. We are being shown states of being that can be achieved without any plant medicine. And so through meditation practice, through yoga, through other embodiment practices like breath work, we can begin to find our own way back to those very euphoric states of being in everyday living. And so, you know, in modern life, we have set the bar for good mental health in absolutely the wrong place. The bar for, you know, for quote unquote being well should be set much, much higher than what is typically accepted as today. You know, again, before my journey began with plant medicine about 5 years ago, by modern standards, I would have described my mental health as very good. But actually there was massive room for improvement. And the analogy that I sometimes use is physical pain. So it's very difficult to envisage the range of experience that is available to you if you haven't experienced it. And so the analogy I give with physical pain is that I thought through my life that I had experienced kind of a one being a paper cut all the way through to a 10, you know, falling down a waterfall onto a rock. I thought I had experienced the full spectrum of physical pain. Now, about 3 or 4 years ago, excuse me, I had an experience that reset my whole scale. I had a very painful shoulder dislocation that moved my previous 10 all the way down to a 3. And I had established myself a new 10. Now, mental health works exactly in the same way in my mind, is that once you've experienced such a profoundly different and more positive way of living and thinking and being, then you can begin to map out for yourself how to move in that direction. And yes, absolutely, plant medicine can light the way, but the goal should be that you're smiling in traffic in everyday life, not that you're, you know, planning constantly your next plant medicine experience. That's really not what this work is about. This work is about being joyful in everyday living.
Jonathan, I see a couple of other really interesting questions that connect with each other. One person is asking, what would be your advice for someone who never tried any plant medicine? What would be meaningful first steps of touching the experience? And also there was another question, what if someone who's curious is scared of the unknown? Are there ways to properly prepare yourself mentally for the experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me answer the second question first, and then ask if I understand the first. I think they're quite related here. So I think anyone who's curious should do an incredible amount of research. Like spend weeks on this. Like you are about to explore the depths of your subconscious. You are about to have unparalleled access to your own mind. And that is something that is not available under everyday waking consciousness in the same way. You know, people describe this experience as 10 years of therapy, and it absolutely can be with the right preparation, the right support, and the right in the right context when it's taken seriously. So I would encourage anyone who's considering this to, you know, there's a quote out there that I absolutely love, which is choose your plant medicine experience like you would choose your neurosurgeon. And I think that's accurate. You are literally going in to rewire the software of your brain. And that's going to have profound implications for you and the rest of your life. And if you are not nervous about that, then you've already lost your mind. So you should be nervous. And I was incredibly nervous going into my own experience. And so you should feel very confident in how well you are supported going into such an experience, because it's normal to be nervous, and you should be well prepared. You should have intentions set, and it will be, and this work is really about your willingness to let go of control. You know, your mind at the moment has incredible control of itself, and we have grown so accustomed to being in control, and the illusion of control is what is keeping us from living life as it can be. And it's that desire to hold on and that desire to control that is actually limiting our own potential. And so this journey is really about letting go of all of those illusions of control. And I've yet to hear anyone who's told me that they're not at all apprehensive about going into such an experience. It is something that is substantially new territory. And anything that's, you know, the unknown in that regard needs to be considered as sacred and as important as the experiences should be.
Would you like me to repeat the second question?
Yeah, sure.
What would be the meaningful first steps of touching the experience for somebody who has never tried any plant medicine before?
Yeah, what's the meaningful in terms of research or in terms of during the actual experience itself?
It doesn't specify.
Yeah, well, I think in terms of research, look, there's an incredible amount of information that's out there. Unfortunately, the signal to noise ratio is just horrible. I would encourage people to look at, there's a few documentaries that I really love. I think Fantastic Fungi does an incredible job of explaining how little we know about the fungal kingdom. And believe it or not, we are descended from fungi. So there's a lot for us to learn there. The other documentary that is more of a healing, has a healing orientation, is A Trip of Compassion. That's one that Tim Ferriss speaks a lot about, and it's just an incredible documentation of the healing potential of psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy. The book that was mentioned earlier, Michael Pollan, I think, by Michael Pollan, How to Change Your Mind, I think is an interesting one because he's such a well-respected author. You know, he's done incredible work in food. And in fact, if I'm to be honest, I actually think his work in food was far more profound than his work on psychedelics. But I still think his book is a good one for those people who are interested. And then I would also look at, for those who are, you know, detail inclined, I would look at the research that's coming out from Johns Hopkins University, Imperial College in London, Harvard and Yale have good stuff coming out. There's some stuff that's coming out from Harvard, and I'm speaking a little bit out of school here, but I understand that there's stuff that's coming out from Harvard that's going to show us that it's not that these plants do interesting things to our brain. It's actually that our brains are as interesting as they are because they have co-evolved alongside with consumption of these plants. So that's a very different insight than the research that's been going on for the past two decades. And if that proves out, there's a funny little YouTube video I'd recommend everyone watch called, I'll type the name of it here, it's animated, and it's called The Stone Ape Theory, and it's a chat between Paul Stamets and Joe Rogan, and it speaks to the theory behind this, or the hypothesis behind this, which is that we were monkeys that came out of the forest and found some mushrooms, perhaps in a cow pie on the savanna, and that was the beginning of the evolution of our brains. And it actually
So it seems like, Jonathan, I don't know if you can hear me. It seems like you're frozen. Perhaps your internet has kind of dropped off. There you go. You're back again.
Oh, sorry. Where did you lose me, Virginia?
At the part where you were saying that there is a theory that monkeys went out of the forest and found.
Oh, right.
And that's why we have this.
Yeah, so this theory is... excuse me. This theory could be an explanation for why our brains have grown so rapidly over the past 200,000 years, which is at odds with what we have seen before that. So our brains, our prefrontal cortex in particular, over the past 200,000 years has just grown incredibly rapidly. The other aspect to this, which is interesting, is that there's only one mammal that really struggles with childbirth, and that's us. All the other mammals have a relatively or comparatively easy time with childbirth. And the reason is that we've got these huge brains now that are very difficult for mothers to contend with as they're giving birth to their children. So it could be that Harvard proves this out in a meaningful way. And again, that would be absolutely groundbreaking if the dialogue around plant medicine and psychedelics changed from these are interesting medicines to our brains are the way they are because of plant medicine and psychedelics. So I'm told that research is still something like 12 to 18 months away. And I'm also told that it's actually been done on the basis of physiological responses that we're seeing within the brain. So changes in specific receptors, the evidence that we have an inbuilt evolutionary biology response to plant medicine, which is, again, sounds incredibly exciting and interesting, and I can't wait to actually read the paper. Singapore. Yes, hello, Melissa. I think Singapore is going to be an interesting one. I'm starting conversations in Singapore. I love Singapore because they are probably the most hyper-rational country in the world. And we also have an incredible body of evidence for plant medicine. And so Singapore is going to have a very interesting choice between continuing to be hyper-rational and also kind of including plant medicine within that, or perhaps trying to bifurcate their thinking and say, we're going to be super hyper-rational over here, and we're going to be a little bit something else for this particular topic because we really don't like substances in Singapore. I live here in Asia, so I am absolutely guns blazing on trying to establish the first legal location for this work to be done in Asia. There's a bunch happening underground in Goa, in Thailand, in Bali, in other places, but it's far beyond time for this work to be happening above ground as well. Any other questions?
There were some questions on microdosing. I don't know if you want to speak on that a little bit. We do have 5 minutes before we wrap up. So
yeah, sure.
Maybe microdosing or anything else you feel is important. People are very excited with the talk, as we can see in the comments. They're all super excited for staying and watching this. So what do you feel is best to go with?
Beautiful. Yeah, microdosing is it's not actually a topic I know a great deal about, if I'm to be perfectly honest. What I do know is that it seems as though the science, and this is absolutely at odds with the nature of our business, but it seems to be that more science is pointing towards microdosing as opposed to macrodosing. I think macrodosing is incredibly powerful to make big changes to your life in a short space of time. But again, as I mentioned before, I don't think it's the answer to go see the unicorns in the jungle every week or every month. And so that's just not a sustainable way of living. I think the more sustainable ways are yoga and meditation, and perhaps microdosing has a role to play within that. As I mentioned, I think the Harvard research that's coming out is actually going to provide a more solid foundation for microdosing. And I know there's a ton of microdosing trials that are ongoing in the US at the moment. And I think it's a really, it sounds very promising because it's a far more integrated way of approaching this subject. Again, I can't actually speak from any personal experience on this subject.
Yes, there are lots of questions, and I'm so happy to have such an engaging audience, and they're helping each other out as well. Would you suggest, there's a lot of questions about previous experiences and where to start and how to navigate your way escalating perhaps upwards the scale?
Yeah, I mean, there's another aspect to this work that is not spoken about enough, which is levels of consciousness. What I would encourage anyone who's interested in their own personal development to look at is Dr. David Hawkins. I will write the name of his leading book into the chat here. Dr. David Hawkins was a little bit ahead of his time. There's a little bit of pseudoscience in some of his work. And because he was ahead of his time and because there was a bit of pseudoscience in his work, his work has largely been overlooked. And it was pretty groundbreaking work. And what David Hawkins found is that there's a scale of consciousness, and that you can actually calibrate individual people's level of consciousness with this scale. So now quantum physics has actually now in more modern times been able to confirm what he was saying, which is that everything is energetic. Even matter itself, you know, this table that my laptop is sitting on is actually just the intersection of energy. And so there's no such thing as matter. It's just the illusion of matter. And so what that means is that each of us as human beings have an energetic vibration, and we can actually be calibrated. People who are advanced healers and advanced workers in this space can actually calibrate the level of consciousness of an individual. And that starts from the very low vibrations, which is like guilt and shame and fear, all the way up into enlightenment. And so Dr. David Hawkins, as he was going through his own journey all the way up to enlightenment, began to document each of his own levels and was able to calibrate his levels of consciousness through that. So for those people, when we're talking about plant medicine, we're not actually talking about, hey, go take these plants and interesting stuff will happen. What we're actually talking about, what we're actually aiming for, is elevating our levels of consciousness, because that's what's going to make improvements to everyday life. And it's, you know, there are experiences that take place as your consciousness is elevated that are just profound. You know, it's no surprise that everyone who's elevated their consciousness to a certain level becomes vegetarian. That's not a coincidence. There are experiences that people go through as their consciousness is elevating that lead them never to eat meat again. And that is universally the case, regardless of whether plant medicine has been used or not used, regardless of religion, regardless of A, B, and C. So there's something here that is worth looking at, and I'd recommend this book for anyone who's interested in elevating their own consciousness.
Oh, thank you so much. And I have to reflect to you the amazing gratitude and joy of our audience for everything you're sharing. They are really, really happy to be hearing and are saying lots of thank yous and how happy they are about this talk. We are coming towards the end. So I would like to redeem myself and play the Ecology and Research Channel sponsorship video. It's only 1 minute and I'll be coming back to wrap up. So in the meantime, while I do this, shout out to the Canadian friends who are so active in the chat. It's nice to have you all with us.
Incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or the other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it. Thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
So there you have it, Forests Without Frontiers, because we are talking about plants after all, and it's nice to be supporting some greenery on the planet. I would like to just mention briefly that everybody can meet in the coffee break room. I have posted the link and will be posting it again in the chat. So you can meet other people. We have an amazing audience and you can chat amongst yourselves. The coffee breakout is happening right after this in the link that you'll find in the chat already, and I'll be posting it again. The next talk is on an hour after this. It's on cancel culture. Is it another name for how stuck we are? Humanism, ethics, and the material turn in contemporary politics, by Dr. Bayo Akomolafe. So for those of you sticking around for that, that is the title, and it sounds awfully interesting. I know I'll be tuning in. I would like to thank you ever so much, Jonathan, because it's been really fascinating. I know I could stay listening to you a lot more. I just want to, before we wrap up, I want to remind people that there's almost 3 hours left of a special offer of buying all the library and having the videos to digest and rewatch in your own time, because there's a lot of fascinating talks like Jonathan's, and I know I'd like to see it again. It's a good thank you to the people putting the conference on as well, and it also helps make it accessible to those who can't actually afford it. So if you want to do that, I'll be posting the link in the chat as well, the upgrade link. With that said, I would like to give the final word back to Jonathan for one top tip. If people leave with one thing on mind, what would you like them to take away?
Yeah, thank you, Virginia, and thank you for the segue to the plants, because that is the right one. You know, In these times, many of us have been removed from our distractions, and with those distractions no longer available to us of travel and this and that and the other and driving to work and all that busyness that we have in life, many of us have been invited to look within. And so we're at a very exciting time within our individual and collective evolution. And more people are taking their own consciousness development very seriously, which is very exciting because the problems are not out there. The problems are all in here. And so as we come to understand that and raise our own consciousness, other people will notice that, and other people will begin to focus on their own consciousness development. And that is what we are seeing worldwide at the moment. And it's a very exciting time to be alive. And this work is really all about our return to our own nature. And we are nature. And so it's not surprising to see cities so quiet. It's not surprising to see, you know, so many people talking about how they're giving up their $5,000 a month rent and moving someplace very beautiful. To enjoy more time in nature and more time with themselves, to look within and to grow and to reconnect to what we are and to take more care of ourselves, take more care of each other, and take more care of this beautiful planet. So the perfect segue. So thank you so much, Virginia, and thank you all so much for tuning in, and hopefully that's been helpful. So thank you and have a lovely day.
Thank you, Jonathan. Really good to have you with us. Thank you very much, everybody.